Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we visit together in the booth, in the back, in the corner, in the dark, in your brain, and we reminisce about Flip Wilson and your past and all the joy we've had, and we have a laugh and we try to get the server's attention, but we can't because they don't exist. Oh, my friend, it's good to be with you regardless, drinks or not. Not long ago, I was taken aboard a spaceship. I wasn't really abducted because they said to me, "We're taking you aboard a spaceship." And I said, "All right." And I guess that's consent, even though I was very hesitant about it because I'm still clinging to that rule that my mother told me when I was very young. Never go anywhere with strangers. But I thought, well, this is an adventure. I'm going to go on their spaceship. They seem like nice fellas. They took me aboard and they sat me at a table. And they said, "Now, the reason we brought you here," and I said, "I'm going to interrupt you for a moment. I want to have a question. Do y'all wear gloves? Because look at your beautiful little long hands with tapered fingers and suction cups at the end. You look like tree frogs." I said, "No, we don't wear gloves because we can control our environment completely so our hands never get cold." I said, "How about that? You're so lucky. Cold hands, warm heart." And they said, "Warm what?" I said, "Go on." They said, "The reason that we brought you here is that we would like you to construct a robot copy of yourself. We're going to make a robot version of you." I said, "Well, you got the wrong guy because I have no engineering skills. I can barely make a computer-operated car. And by barely, I mean not at all. I can't really make anything. Unless we're making it out of paper mache, then I could. Are we making decoys? I could do that totally. But I don't know if I could actually make something that works." They said, "Don't worry about that. We're going to do the real construction. We just want you to supervise the project. Because who knows you better than you?" I said, "All right, I got one more question for you. Why don't you have a nose?" And he got very upset. And he said, you have no manners at all. I lost my nose to cancer." I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I feel so stupid." He said, "Yeah, you think your son is strong. On my planet, I can't even step out for a minute. I opened the door by mistake and it fried my face off." I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, go on." He said, "All right, well, we're going to put you in a room now." And he took me to this other place, and there was three tools laid out on a table. The one was one of those rubber circles that you use to open a jar that's difficult to open. The other was a set of nail clippers. And the third was a Leatherman tool. So I thought, well, what are we going to do now? Then they sent in a couple of the engineers, two of these alien fellas with the long tapered fingers with the suction cups on the end. And I said, "Well, how do you clap at a concert? Because it seems like one clap and your hands would be stuck together." They just looked at me. I think I was being insulting, but really I'm just curious about other cultures and other species and everything like this. This is the first time I've been on a spaceship. I know lots of people get abducted regularly. And so I was a newbie. And they said, "All right, we're going to start this project. Now you tell us all about yourself." So I began telling them stories and my memories and began describing myself. I said, "Well, you know, I'm not very smart and not very attractive." And this went on for, I guess, hours and hours and hours. Then the supervisor came in. He said, "I'm going to have a look at your progress." And they looked over at the robot, and the robot had this enormous, hideous head on it. And it had kind of shriveled up arms and everything. It was just the ugliest thing you can imagine. And then he asked it a question and went, "I don't know, I think my grandfather said." And I realized what I'd done. It was nothing like me. He said, "Now, how is this possible? You made this." I said, "Yes." He said, "All the memories you told us were accurate." I said, "Yes." He said, "The description of yourself was accurate." I said, "As far as I know." He said, "Why does this robot look and sound and act nothing like you?" I said, "Well, that is a mystery." He said, "Well, it isn't really a mystery to us, because we know for a fact that you are really the last person who knows you, aren't you? You think you do, but you don't. Not enough to construct a robot." Not long after that, I bought a mansion. I bought a big home, large home. And you say, "Oh, I don't believe that for a minute. You believed I was on a spaceship." But I bought a large home. Now, it was, we drove out there when I first bought it. The realtor drove me out there, and it was in the middle of the desert. We just kept driving. I said, there's nothing around. We have passed the trees ages ago. This is just desert. And he said, wait, wait, wait. Then we got in the middle, and there was this grassy lawn, and on it, it looked like a chateau or something in France. I said, well, I was hoping for a house on the sea. He said, we don't have a house on the sea, but this is a house on the tree. I said, a house on the tree? He says, yes, it overlooks a very large tree. And sure enough, in the middle of nowhere, in that big desert, there was a huge tree. I don't know whether it was an oak or whether it was some kind of, it might have been one of those prehistoric, a lycopod tree or something from 300 million years ago. And it stood there behind the house, a few yards behind the house. I said, this house will do. This will be fine. And when I turned around, the real estate agent was gone. I stood alone in the house for a minute. And like we all do when we're alone, I yelled out. I said, hello, anybody here? Anybody here? Anybody here? Anybody here? Like that. It wasn't an echo. I just did that for fun. But there wasn't anybody there. I think it was all empty. I walked out to the back, and I opened the, there was some sliding glass doors, just like in my grandparents' Florida home. And there was that big tree out back. And I said, you know, if that tree was the sea, I'd go swimming right now. And so I walked out back to the tree, and I looked around, and I noticed there was a small pond, but it wasn't really big enough to bathe in. But I also noticed there was one of those large troughs, the kind that cows drink from. And so I dragged it to the base of the tree. And I began to fill it up with a bucket I found until I had filled the entire trough like a giant hot tub. And then I took off all my clothes and I jumped in, but it wasn't a hot tub. It was freezing cold. Oh, it was so cold, but I couldn't quite jump out because my muscles had seized and I just sat there in the freezing tub. And I imagined that I had jumped into the sea, that I had jumped into some sort of grotto, one of those kind of whirlpools surrounded by rocks, some seaside feature that the locals refer to as the Devil's Cauldron or Satan's Bathtub or something. And I imagined that I was bobbing up and down in this dark, cold sea. And then I climbed over the side finally as if I were climbing over the rocks to get out. And I stood there dripping wet and cold and shivering underneath that tree. I reached for my clothes and I put them on. And of course I was soaked and damp. But I stood there looking around. There was nothing on the horizon. Just me and the house and the tree and no sea. I looked up at the tree and I noticed that there was something hanging in one of the branches, one of the lower branches, like a piece of paper. And I went over and I grabbed it. And I looked at it and it was a picture of my friend Lou. Oh, Lou, I hadn't seen him in so long. I mean, maybe months, but somehow we'd lost touch. Oh, I love my friend Lou, but you know how life is. You make these friends and they come in and out of your life, don't they? They float in and out. I once had a friend who started a petting zoo. It was a very beautiful petting zoo, but it was completely unsuccessful because all the animals in his petting zoo were birds. And the birds wanted nothing to do with the little children who came in to pet them. And their children would look up in the air and cry and plead, why won't you let me pet you? And the birds would just sit there on the high branches looking down at the children. I don't know if they were mocking them or they just really didn't understand. Sometimes we don't know what we're hearing, the cries that we're hearing. Are they pleas? Are they cries of fear? Are they cries of anger? Birds don't know. Birds don't care. Birds don't like to be petted. So I looked at that picture of Lou. I thought, I wonder, that's so funny how that got there. Maybe it flew out of my pocket or something when I took off my clothes and I went back in the house. I looked around for food. I said, I wonder if Don left the non-dairy creamer. I'd heard that on an ad one time. I realized recently that a large percentage of my memories come from advertisements. And I'm afraid that if I begin to lose my mind, I might start to conflate those advertisements with my own experience. And I thought, well, that can't be too bad, you know, because some of them are very nice. They want you to feel good things and stuff like that. So I have one of them instant coffees that makes me instantly in Paris, where they don't have instant coffee. Isn't that interesting? So I sat there in the kitchen, and I wondered about food. And as I was wondering, I looked over and I saw that there were some dried apricots sitting on the counter. I thought, that's very funny. I wonder if it's okay to eat food that people have left in a house you just bought. Have you ever bought a house? And you look through it and there's always something that the previous owner left. And it's usually some kind of Time Life book series or something about ghosts. And then I began to get a little scared. This house was large. I wonder if it was haunted. And then I heard a sound, like a thunk, thunk, like a footstep. And I imagine, oh, how gothic. I wonder if that footstep, that gothic element in this story, represents my past or some vague memories. And so I turned around, expecting to see nothing. But what I saw was a classic ghost, kind of in a sheet, going, like that. And I went, oh, you just scared, you almost scared the daylights out of me. Go away, you silly ghost. And it did. I looked around the house and I realized, you know, I'm not really afraid of ghosts. I'm afraid of people. I don't think, if there's somebody hiding in the house with a knife, now that is frightening. If it's just some ghost who like takes off his head and goes, ooh, I don't know, that's not really going to cut it. I'm afraid of real things. I'm afraid of real things like loneliness or vague fears about my fate. Oh, I guess those aren't really real. I like to sit in empty houses. I like company, but boy, I do like to be alone. I went out back again and looked at the tree, and I saw that there was another picture in it. I knew it was a picture. I knew now what was going on. That tree was some sort of tree of memories, and I was going to have to experience my whole life in reverse from now to my deepest, oldest memories of when I was a child. I'm going to have to go through them all. Maybe this is the end of my life or something. Maybe I'm dreaming. Maybe I'm already dead. I don't know what it is, but I'm always in this big darn house, a house that I've never owned in life. Before you were born, this is my understanding, and from a religion that I was briefly in the 70s before it was found to be a cult, that before we are born, we're asked who we want to be. And because we are unborn and because we are just sort of spirits and angels, we are infinitely reasonable, most of us. And we say, well, you know, I don't want to be the king because, boy, you could get your head cut off or, you know, it's lonely. I know that. It's a strange existence. I don't want to be some hugely wealthy celebrity or something. Imagine not knowing whether your friends liked you for who you were or whether they just wanted some fame or some wealth. There's so many things I don't want to be. I think just make me one of the ordinary people. Make me a farmer. Make me the child of a merchant. Something like that. And so most people become that. Most people become ordinary. And every once in a while, a spirit will say, make me the king. And we know there's something not quite pure about that one. And so they do. I hope they learn their lesson. And so we are born and we live these lives. And once we get here, we begin to question our choices that we made before we were us. And we say, oh my gosh, I should have picked king. Oh my gosh, I should have been Kadishian or whatever his name is so famous. But I don't really want to be those people when it comes right down to it. And yet, when the aliens asked me to make a robot of myself, what did I make but something that wasn't anything like me? I should have had it shoot things out of its fingers. Nothing, just something benign like those little baby carrots, which aren't at all. Boy, I learned that. So the thing that you think is a baby carrot isn't a baby carrot. It's a big carrot that's been whittled down to look like a baby. So real baby carrots are very tender and very small and everything, but those little things that look like some sort of horrible suppository, those are adult carrots. I say adult carrots. There's no, I don't know, there's adulthood in carrots. I'm a carrot in my senescence. Oh, I can tell. Look how woody you are. Those are not real babies. They just look like babies because they're little. Appearances are deceptive, aren't they? I sat in my house. I decided I was going to explore then. I got up and I walked to the foyer. Now, I say foyer, you might say foyer. I say boyer, you might say boyer. We all have different ways of pronouncing the same word, don't we? I say freedom, you say authoritarianism. But I stood there, so I'm going to walk into this as if I've never been to this house before. I'm going to explore my history. I'm going to explore my life. Oh, I gave it away. It's an allegory. Whoops, I messed that up. The house is me. I wish I had thought that through a little more. Sometimes when I'm telling a story, I forget to leave the punchline to the end. I'm so excited. I want to tell you the punchline first, then let me think of the story. The way my mother tells a joke is this. She goes, oh, I laughed. I heard this joke. I said, what is it, Mama? I don't know. So that's enough, though. I'm going to laugh. Let's just start laughing then. There are gurus that teach that if you just start laughing, then you'll really start laughing. So you fake it till you make it kind of thing. And so they have people sit around and and to me, that seems like insanity, doesn't it? You go, why would I do? I don't understand. That's like I'm going to hit myself in the head until I'm really in pain. Let's just let it. I like to let it happen to me. I don't want to know what's right. I like the journey. I don't have to necessarily get to the end. I walked up to a fun house one time at a carnival. And I said, I'd like to go into the fun house. And he said, you know, a lot of times, you know, you might hit a mirror or something like that. You might walk into glass and everything like that. And I said, oh, no, yeah, I don't want to do that. And he said, I'll tell you what, for a little extra, I'll just move you around to the exit. I said, oh, all right. So he goes, well, it's $5 to get in, $10, and I'll get you right to your destination. So I paid him the $10, and he said, all right, take one step to your right. And there I was at the exit. So thank you. And I left. But I realized then, by avoiding the chance of hitting my nose in that glass, that I had had no experience. I had gotten to the end, but I had nothing to show for it. When I made my robot that was supposed to be an exact duplicate of me, he looked nothing like me. A little bit. He had a white beard. It's like when you go to the fair and they say, they do a caricature of you. And I say, you're going to draw my portrait? Yes. He goes, what's your hobby? I said, well, why do you ask? He said, well, I'm going to show you doing it. And why is that? He said, well, so they'll know it's you. I go, won't they know it's you because you're drawing my likeness? He goes, well, it won't really be an exact likeness. I said, why are you drawing it then? He goes, no, it's a caricature. I'm going to take one of your features. I'm going to exaggerate it. For instance, I'm going to draw a giant head with this big white beard. Then I'm going to draw a body that's actually about the size of your hand. And then that body is going to be bowling. And then I'm going to make my signature huge at the bottom. I said, why am I paying for that? That's not something I'd hang up. That's hideous. He goes, no, it's fun. It was fun for you. You get to sit there and mock me. It's like we're sitting next to each other in seventh grade. And you go, look at this picture I drew of you. And you go, you made my head huge. He goes, yeah, because you got a big old head, big head. I don't want that. I'm not going to pay for that. I get a big argument with those caricature artists. Bless their hearts. I know that this is not probably their first choice. I wonder if the classics, you know, the great artists of the past, like Van Gogh and everything, I wonder if they did that. The first time he drew that postman, is like, look, I made your head huge and your body's little, and look, you're giving out letters. And the postman said, no, that's, come on now, draw me properly. My goodness. Picasso was doing that. Said, look where I put your eyes, all over here on the side of your head. Come on, Picasso, do it right. That doesn't look nothing like me. When I would draw when I was young, my grandmother always says that, oh, that looks like a person, but just doesn't look like you. Oh, sorry. Can I draw your portrait? Oh, that's very good, but just doesn't look like me. All right, well, it's very difficult to actually draw a portrait. You know, what makes us look like us is this microscopic difference. If you make the eyes just tiny bit too close together or tiny bit too far apart, it doesn't look like that person, does it? Do you ever look at historical portraits of a person and you think, this cannot all be paintings of the same person? All those artists have seen something different. And it's not that exactly, it's just impossible to really capture someone's face. Even photographs lie, because based on the angle, it might not really look like that person. If you were to take a picture of me, kind of at a strange angle, or how I usually am, which is holding a flashlight under my chin, so I look sinister. That's what I do if I'm, instead of carrying a weapon, I carry a flashlight, and if I ever get confronted, I just hold the flashlight under my chin and I go, ooh, like that, and that's enough to scare any criminal from robbing me. They run away, and then I haven't had to hurt them or anything. Oh, I don't want to do that. I guess if I was fearful, say, people say to me, Hardy, you seem like such a gentle soul. And I say, oh, thank you. I have fooled you. And you go, what do you mean? Well, look, I'm trying to be gentle, but I don't know if you're like this. Now, hopefully I'm not confessing something. You know, you never know. But inside, I find I often am very, very angry. And I don't mean like Mr. Rogers angry. I mean like strangle the innocent angry. I mean like run down a city street with a couple machetes, screaming my head off, yelling, injustice, injustice, like that angry. I mean, sometimes I don't even know myself. Oh, what we are capable of. I'm a stranger to myself sometimes because these human elements of me just sort of pop out. It is like being the werewolf man. And all those stories, they seem to be allegories too, that people, when the moon comes up, they turn into an animal. Yes, sometimes there are things that turn us into our worst selves. Other times there are things that help us be our better selves. And what is that? We get opportunities all the time to help people. I never help anybody out like I should, you know, because I'm so worried about myself and I go around in a fog. And then I think, well, what should I be doing? I don't even know if there is a should. I'm just having to go by my heart. Boy, this is a combination of my heart and my head gets me through life. And both of them, I know for a fact, are defective. So what's that mean? Who am I letting down? Who am I lifting up? Oh, my friends, sometimes I just want to be with others. And sometimes I want to be with others and keep my mouth shut so that they don't reject me. Because, oh, that's the fear, isn't it? Is, oh, they're going to reject me and I'm going to be all alone. And I don't like to be... Wait. But I do like to be alone. So, what's that mean? It means I like to be alone by choice. I like to be alone knowing that I am loved. There's no better time to be alone when a bunch of people are begging you to go out and you go, oh, you know what, y'all, I'm just, bless you, but I think I'm going to just stay in tonight. Now, the worst is to be alone when you're sitting there and you're waiting for people to call. And they don't call you or include you. And then you go, no, I don't want to be alone. So it isn't about being alone or being with people. It's about feeling powerless or powerful. It's about feeling like you have control over your life or you don't have control over your life. And I got to tell you, from the bottom of my heart, I believe that control over your life is an illusion. I believe we're all bumbling along in a wonderful way. And I believe that we are conscious, but I believe there's very little that we can do sometimes about our condition. And so, we must put our hands out as we bump around in space like that and try to grab one another occasionally and pull us close and say, hey, let's visit for a while. Hello, I'm visiting with you, and now I'm tired of you, let you go. And people drift in and out of our lives. And that's why when I go out to this giant tree behind the house, and I look at it, and there's occasionally photographs on it. It's not a tree full of photographs of everyone I've ever met. It's a tree that occasionally produces a precious fruit of memory of a person I've forgotten, and there they are again. Well, there's Butchie. Oh, there's Butchie's picture. I just saw him not long ago. I wonder how he's doing. And there's a picture of a guy what's his name? We used to play together when we were 10. I don't know even what happened to him. He could have died at 11 and I wouldn't know. I wonder how much he's still affecting me, how much he's in there running around. I wonder if there are other people living in this house and I will never run into them. Maybe they're in another dimension. Maybe they're just in a room that I've never gone into. I used to have a recurring dream like that, that I had a house that I had been in for a long time, but there was one room that I never entered. And when I did enter it, I opened up and there was a whole family living in there. And they were like, "What?" And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry." And go, "Yeah, well, this is where we live." "Oh, I'm very sorry. I didn't know that. I thought the whole house was mine." And they said, "Well, you're very arrogant. No, the whole house is not yours. This is ours." "Oh, I'm sorry. We live here." "All right. How much of the house in your mind, how much of that is occupied by others? And how much of it is yours, I wonder? I know that there are things in my head that I did not intentionally put there, like that non-dairy creamer. I'm going to go to my grave thinking that. I see that ad. I'm going to go through it step by step. Man gets a beach house on the sea. He borrows it, just like I was going to do, but his is really on the sea. A friend has loaned it to him. Oh, and I hope to heck he's in the right one. That'd be horribly wandering the wrong one. I thought this was my friend's house. And he looks around. His friend's left some groceries and stuff, much the same way as my imaginary house. And he's having a cup of coffee, and he says, "I see Tom or Don or John or Omar or something like that. Rohan, I see that Ashish has left the non-dairy creamer. I think I see that my friend Ping has left the non-dairy creamer. I think I'll give it a try." Or maybe he says whirl. I don't remember. And so he tries this non-dairy creamer. Ironically, I do not remember the brand. And so even if I believe that non-dairy creamer was the secret to my happiness, I would probably go out and not get the right brand. Perhaps it doesn't exist anymore. I know that for a fact. I know that there's many products that are still in my head that even if I wanted to patronize that business, I could not, because there is no longer a television service center. And I won't give out the phone number because you'll call that phone number and it won't be television service center. Even though that jingle is locked in my memory forever. Why did you do that? Why did you put your hand in the wet cement of my consciousness? Did I let you do that? I wish you had been a book. Why couldn't you have been a novel and not an advertisement between the reruns of the Three Stooges that I was watching when I was 13? When I was 13, when I was 12, something like that, I'd get home from school, and I guess right around then they would show about three Stooges shorts in a row. Is that right? They're all about 12 minutes or so. Could you get 3.5 hours? Maybe it was only 2. I don't remember. But I would call up my friend, and I would say, "Are you watching the Three Stooges?" And he'd go, "Yeah, I'm watching." And we would stay on the phone the entire time commenting on the Three Stooges together. And then I would get out my book because I had a history of comedy teams book. And it would list all the different comedy teams, Three Stooges, Ritz Brothers, and all their two-reeler shorts. And so they had a list of every Three Stooges short that had ever been made, the year it came out and everything, and I would make a checklist. I've confessed this before. You know what you're like? You are like my therapist, but my therapist is asleep. Or he's in the next town and he has no way of getting back to me. And it doesn't matter because it's all about me telling you. And it's supposed to be, is it supposed to be for me? Perhaps you're just eavesdropping on somebody's inner workings of their mind. Is that enough? I hope it's interesting for you. I never know. I fear that a lot of people aren't really truly honest about who they are. Well, for obvious reasons. It's very difficult. We don't want to be judged. I don't want to be judged. I want to be ostracized. But boy, I got nothing to lose. You know, I have no fame or acclaim or money. I really got the very, very little I can lose except the love of the people that I love, and I feel like there's no chance that I'm going to lose that just being honest. But I want you to hear that somebody else has fears and confusion to the point that they almost are unable to say what's true or what's not true and what's real and what's not real. Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you what makes up for it, and that's imagination. Imagination helps you navigate this world. Imagination helps you make sense of it. If you just go by what you experience, you're not going to be able to put together a real true picture of what's happening. You need to imagine. I've never seen the universe. I've never even seen the solar system. I've never seen the Earth from a distance. So you've never seen those pictures? Yes, I've seen those pictures. Well, then you've seen it. No, I've seen those pictures, and I can reach out and I can touch the picture, and the picture's right there. But I have not been on the moon. I've not actually seen it. Does that mean it's not real? No, I believe it's real. I believe the solar system is real. I believe the universe is real. I believe there really are galaxies. But I will never see them. I will never see them, and it's only in my imagination that they exist. Oh, use your imagination. How'd I do that, Hardy? Stop pulling. You know, it's like you get a truck, and it's got a governor on it. What's a governor? Well, a governor is a horrible, horrible political figure who can do a lot of damage to people without any, with, you know, with very little votes. Just about the worst position in the whole United States. Governors can absolutely wreak havoc. And yet, hardly anybody votes for them. Go look around. It's true. It's amazing. Governors are real. That's why in England, when they go, yes, governor, they're being ironic. It's a way of saying, yeah, jerk. I don't think anybody has respect for them. They've never done anything really great. They usually do something like, you know, prevent somebody from exercising their rights or something. That's what governors do. But they have them on vehicles, and it keeps you from going fast because it doesn't trust your judgment. Governors don't trust your judgment. People who govern you don't trust your judgment. People who govern you, people who would have power over you, don't trust you, don't want you to make decisions. So when those aliens called me onto their ship, when those aliens told me to make a robot of myself, they trusted me. And yet, what did I deliver? A distorted view of who I am. How can I ever change the world if I have a distorted view of who I am? How can I make my dream house if I do not know myself? How can I go on like this with a false narrative and false memories of who I am and expect a good outcome, expect a paradise, if I don't know even what I like to eat, what I like to wear, who I am, who I want to be with? Say, we are giving you the opportunity to construct an entire world. Oh, don't do that to me, alien. I don't know where to begin. Look what I did with the robot. And they said, do you want us to do it for you? Not really. Not really. You know why? And they said, why? I said, because of gloves. I said, what? Because the gloves are going to have those long tapered fingers, and at the end they're going to have some kind of bulb for the suction cup. Those gloves don't fit me. Those gloves don't fit me. Why would I want you to make my world? I think I'll make my own world. Isn't it funny how we let others put a governor on our brains, a governor on our imaginations? For instance, you say, I'm a creative person. I want to be an artist. I want to do things, but I can't. Nobody's really stopping you from doing anything. You just think there's conditions. You think there's a certain way to do it. I want to be an actor. Act. But no one will ever hire me. So what? Just act. Just do stuff. Do it. Do it. Live your life. Forget others. Forget those things you've seen. Forget the commercials. You do not need to borrow a beach house to use non-dairy creamer. You can just go to the Ang store and get your own. You do not need that. And once you use the creamer, I gotta tell you, you're not gonna suddenly be oceanside. You're just gonna have white coffee. And guess something else about that creamer? It's not milk. It just makes your coffee a different color. Lord knows it could be paint. And other things I learned from the Three Stooges, and I've seen this recently, it's come up multiple times. There's one quote that I always remember. So they're painting, the Stooges are. And Moe's drinking coffee. That's a clue that Moe's a coffee drinker, if you're wondering. Moe, coffee or tea? I guess it's coffee. And he's drinking out of a mug, and like most painters, sometimes for some inexplicable reason, we also put paint in an identical coffee mug. You know what I'm saying? So the one with the paint in it says world's greatest dad, and the one that has coffee in it says world's greatest dad. And so they're hard to distinguish. So he's busy, occupied, and he reaches without looking for a mug, and he takes a sip, and he spits it out. And he says to no one in particular, I just drank some paint. And Curly or Larry or Emil Sitka or one of them says, that's silly. I always drink coffee. Oh, this angers Mo. Mo becomes so angry, says, I want to crush Curly's skull in a pants press. That's overreacting, but that man's his brother. Can you imagine that? That man's his brother and says, I want to put some sort of pliers, the kind of which we don't have anymore, this is kind of big ones, I want to put it in his nostril. And I will grab his nostril with pliers and give him pain, the kind of pain that he gave me by mocking me, by making me feel stupid because I made a small error and I drank some paint. And you think I'm going to be all right? Oh, I feel like Divine after she ate poo. Oh, am I going to be sick? Like that? I don't know. We start to panic about our lives. I don't know about you, but I vacillate between, sometimes I'm so glad to be alive, you know? And then I'll get sad and I'll go, oh, I don't want to hardly be alive. I don't want to hardly be alive. Oh my gosh, just cough. Am I dying? Oh no, I don't want to die. It's not life I'm afraid of, it's fear. Afraid of fear, that's weird, isn't it? How you, you're feared, it's a feedback loop. Do this experiment. Take a microphone and stick it up to the amplifier. And no, don't do that. Do this. Take a video camera and aim it at the monitor. And you know what you'll get? You'll get the old Doctor Who opening from the 60s. It's a beautiful thing. You're filming. Right? Isn't that interesting? And you get a little taste of infinity. And you go, boy, that looks familiar. I wonder if that's what the universe is, that I'm just looking at myself in all these myriad forms. And then you start looking around at people. You go, well, that can't be, because that really obese, carbuncular, angry person there throwing garbage at people, is that me? Oh, yep, I think it is. I think it is you. Why wouldn't it be you? It's like when we meet relatives. You say, oh, it can't be. That person can't be the same blood. Oh, they are. It's the aspects of yourself are the same way. I have family reunions with myself. I get together with all the aspects of myself, and I try to get along with each person, but there's always one. There's always one part of my self family that I can't abide by. Always butt heads. I don't know why. Maybe they remind me of myself. Maybe I just don't have the patience for some things. I don't know what it is. Oh, let's have a party. Let's have a spontaneous party right now. Let's do it. I love that. You know, let's use my enthusiasm right now, the excitement I have because I'm able to talk to you. Oh, do you know how powerful it is? I'm glad that I'm not compensated in any way, because I tell you what, then I could not handle the blessing. You don't understand what a privilege it is for me to speak to you. I didn't always understand it. I really didn't. And then I didn't understand that I didn't have to be consistent. Say, Hardy, sometimes you come on here and you do little things that almost sound like sitcoms. Yes, I know, because that's what I have to tell you that day. Other times you come on here and you sound like just maybe you're rambling. I go, yeah, because sometimes that's all I want to do. That's all I want to do is just tell you everything that's on my mind in no particular order. Because I feel like if I was telling you in a particular order, and it sounded as if I had written it down, I had thought about it ahead of time, that it would be a script, that it would be designed to elicit a certain response. And that's not what we do in conversation, is it? When I'm talking to you, I'm not trying to manipulate you. I'm not trying to get a certain, well, if I tell a joke, I want you to laugh. But sometimes I want to be surprised by your reaction. I just want to tell you what's in my heart and then see what you think about that. And so when I have the opportunity to talk to more than one person at a time, and that's the way I see that, I feel like I'm visiting your church. You say, we'd like you to speak at our church because we've mistaken you for someone else. I'm not going to disabuse you of that. I'm going to show up and pretend to be that person, I guess, because I want the opportunity to speak to a lot of people at once. Because there's certain things that I need to say to humanity. One is, and I mean this, I hope I can say this without tears. I may easily make myself cry. Y'all scare me. I get scared. I read a lot of history, and I see how good people can turn into bad people if they're afraid and they're encouraged and they're together, and they think they're right. And that worries me, and I get frightened. I say, please, don't hate me. I know that our relationship to artists sometimes is strange, and I will see online, say, I highly recommend this artist. You will love her or hate her. And I think, oh my gosh, hate her? Boy, if you hate her, you must super hate Hitler, right? Because hate, do I want to be hated? And by the same token, do I want to be loved for the same limited knowledge of myself? Do I want you to love me or hate me? Can't you just feel momentarily amused or indifferent? I'll go for that. Oh, but if I'm doing something that makes you hate me, I need to stop. Because I think of the things that inspire hate. Or, you know, hurting your puppy. Did I kick your puppy? Or is my material just stale? I want to know, is there a difference? I want to know what hate is, because I don't really know. And I don't really know what love is, but I'm not so worried about that, because misplaced love isn't always fatal. Well, yes it is. Don't you watch movies? Don't listen to anything I say. Abba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba-doo. Listen. Sometimes music just entertains you. Sometimes all we want is for our spirit to be lifted. I was in a low funk, Carter, and then you made me giggle just out of nowhere. Thank you. It's what I'm trying to do. But then I'm trying to elevate it to a sort where it's a spiritual act for me, where it's my purpose. I'm going to try to do that as much as I can. And try to limit the harm that I'm doing, because I know that just squeezes out of me like gas. Oh, I'm so sorry for my hate gas, my intolerance gas. I'm so sorry that somebody cut some intolerance. Right? That's what happens. You let it go and it goes like a stink cloud around you, your intolerance, your fear, and then the whole room stinks. And you gotta go get the Glade. You know what the Glade is? Glade's just reality shows. You're just masking the odor. What you need to do is take some sort of soul beano. You got to take something that gets rid of the gas. Don't just go around spraying it, trying to cover it up. Let's root this thing at the root of its root. Which reminds me of my big tree and behind my mansion. The one that I bathe in or under or beside. And why do I do that? Because I wanted to be in the tree. I wanted to be part of the tree. I didn't want to be separated from it. I didn't want to see my life as something that was outside of me, something I lived. I wanted to still be living it. A tree still has in it its past. You see that trunk? Yep. Inside of it is the little tree is still in there. Never goes away. Right? With the tree, it's like that. So that's why I have rings. Go look at the sapling is still inside the large tree. With people, you can't see that, right? If you cut them over, cut them open, and I know this from surgery shows, they used to have lots of them, we are not like nesting dolls. There's a teenage me in there, and then you cut a little inside of them as a toddler me and everything right down to the baby. It's not like that, is it? We can't see, just in our physical experience, the little young us's that are in there. Where are they? They're in your head, though. They're in your head, the little you. Still in there. They remain. I was watching Richard Feynman recently, the late physicist. And he's amazing. You want to get excited about the world, watch any video of him. There's a brilliant guy, right? Brilliant physicist. And still, his whole life, he maintained the same enthusiasm and curiosity about the world. And it made him smile just to think about why things are. And he said, do you ever think about what a tree is made of? How does it, you know, it's got the seed, but then where does it get the substance? Where does it get the substance for itself? And see, it takes it out of the air. It takes it right out of the air. The tree is made of air. It takes that carbon dioxide and it releases the oxygen part and it keeps the carbon part and it makes itself that way. He said, yes, there are also things that come from the soil, some minerals and all, but they're negligible. It's mostly made of this carbon that it got from the air. And I thought, that's so beautiful. That thing is just made out of nothing, but it's not made out of nothing. It's made out of what was there. And we come into this world and you say, how did I get this substance for myself, for my thoughts? And you say, oh, they were just comes out of the air? No, it comes out of the substance that were there. You are made of all the thought that has ever been. You are made of all the ideas that were already there. That's all what you're thinking. It's pre-existing ideas. It's the air quality. Now, what was the quality of that air? And what is the quality of the air that you were making for future generations? When they get there, and those future generations and those little baby brains start to absorb the air of our culture, the air of our values, the air of our history, what's going to go in there? What's going to form them? What kind of air are we making for them? Think about that. Who are you making? What are you doing? Are you poisoning the air? Are you putting your gas into it, your nasty fear gas? Shh. Let's cover it up, and then let's get some gas medicine and take that. And let's stop eating things that are difficult to digest, that aren't meant to be food, that aren't meant for human food. Anger and fear, let's banish them. Oh, it's happy time, it's time to clap. And we'll give you clapping lessons. Clapping lessons, what's that? No, we don't, you know, a lot of times we don't have a lot of joy in our life. And we need to jumpstart it, like the laughing gurus. And although I don't recommend that because it makes you seem insane and you'll scare yourself, I do recommend clapping. Now, do this alone because it is a sign of imbecility. And so you want to make sure that if you're clapping like that, that you just kind of do it maybe in private. There's lots that is pleasurable to us that we must do in private for the sensibilities of others. And one of that is clapping out of joy. Clapping out of joy. Just trying to sing a song by yourself. It's amazing how many people say, okay, spontaneously start singing a song. And they say, oh, I can't. I don't have any musical. But just spontaneously, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. Even if you put them alone, okay? This is how self-judgmental people are. You say, I'm going to put you alone and no one will ever hear you, see you, or anything. Now, sing. No, my mouth's down. I can't sing. You're alone. This baffles me completely. Nobody is there. Please, just by yourself, sing. No, I can't. I can't sing. I can't. Go. It drives me crazy. Can't you break out for a second? Are you that? Do you have that much? Are you that much a hostage to yourself that you can't be different than who you think you are? I was wearing sandals one time. I walked into a bar and I was wearing sandals. And Ben says to me, he says, I didn't take you for the sandal-wearing type. I said, I'm not. That's why I'm wearing them. I'm forcing myself to wear these because people wear sandals. And I'm going to wear them because that's the last thing in the world that I would do is wear these man sandals like this. And he said, you know what? I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. You are not above wearing sandals. Am I right? You are not above clapping for joy. You are not above singing a silly little song. My gosh, y'all. At least in private. At least in private, let your hearts be lifted up. At least when you're alone, get off your own back. When you're alone, just say, oh, you know what? I'm going to take a little guilt break. Nobody's going to know. Nobody's going to know. Because there's no governor on your brain. It's just you can think whatever you want and think it. Get through it. Clear the air. Just do that. Clap, clap, clap. Gonna clap my hands and just start singing. I don't know what's gonna come out of my mouth. I'm gonna just acknowledge that I like to lift up my heart and feel joy. I'm afraid of dying. Why are you afraid of dying? Well, not in theory. I'm afraid to see sadness in the people I love. and the people who love me. I don't like to see broken hearts. I don't like to see tears. I don't like to see that. I don't want to feel, oh my gosh, what a fear. What a fear. But you know what? I'm not dead yet. I'm not dying now. And you're still alive. And you only have the moment anyway. So don't worry about it too much. Just take that break. Take a clap break. Let yourself be abducted by a flying saucer. Let yourself go to a seaside mansion. Let yourself bathe in the cold water of a cow trough. Let yourself walk nude and dripping to that mansion's back patio and sit there and lay there in the sun and look up to the sky and say, I don't care about my fat, misshapen body anymore. I don't care about my hideous, distorted figure here. I don't care that there are lines in my face so deep that I gotta clean out the crud with a Q-tip like it's a Sharpay's ear. I don't care about any of that anymore. I'm still alive and I'm still having an adventure. I still am capable of feeling great joy. I still have this thing in my head that lets me go anywhere in the universe. I can go to the ends of the universe. I can see all of it. I can see the solar system. I can jump from galaxy to galaxy in my mind, and that's the only way to do it anyway. That's the only way to do it anyway. I believe that islands exist that I haven't seen. I've got no problem with that. In fact, I'm going to go to them right now. And we're sitting on the beach. And I made the sand so that it doesn't get up in your trunks. I did something special to it where it still feels neat between your toes, but then it doesn't quite cling to you. It has more of a, you can just kind of brush it off. It's more kind of styrofoamy, and yet you can sculpt with it. Isn't that wonderful? It's like silly sand that you used to get as a kid. Squirt it out of a tube, make a castle. We can go any of those places. And you know what? They say, oh, I'm not creative. That's baloney. Yes, you are. What you are is fearful of being judged. What you are is somebody that maybe has never worked on a particular skill. What you are is probably discouraged. Make anything you want. Do it all. Do it all in your head. You can do anything. I don't know about living your life. I can't tell you how to get a job. I can't tell you how to navigate all those things. That's not my purview. I'm a skull dweller. And when you want to go in there, I'd be more than happy to help you and guide you. I'd be more than happy to be an estate agent for your mind. And that was the United Kingdom version, and now I will give you the United States version. I would be more than happy to be a real estate agent for your mind. Also, you don't hear, but for UK listeners, I put, there's lots of U's where there should be. Say, color, like that. Well, I'd be happy to take you through these places because I got a key to the lockbox. I can get us into any one of these places, and especially your own mind. I'll open it up for you, but you got to promise me that if I open up this, that you'll look, you'll examine the place, that you'll crawl into the crawl space, that you'll go in every closet, that you'll have some curiosity for it, that you'll love this house, that you'll love the house. I'm reluctant to sell you the house, because will you love it as much as I did? Yes. You promise? Yes. You go in there and make something great out of it? You have love there? You have experiences? Right? You will? Yes. You promise? All right. Then I'm going to leave the house and I'm going to leave it to you. Be careful with it. Be good with it. Children? Their children listen to this show? Uncle Hardy's going to tell you something. First of all, I'd just like to point out, I'm not your uncle, bless you, but we probably are distant cousins, so I'll be Cousin Hardy. I like that better. It's less uncle. Well, the good thing about uncle is I can use the adjective avuncular, which I love. I love that because it's fun to say. But really, I'm cousuncular to you. But Cousin Hardy wants to say something to all the young people, and this is it. Don't limit yourself. It's so hard to think free when you're surrounded by people who think differently. All right? You say, well, all my family thinks one thing, and I think something different. And so perhaps I should just think like they do to be accepted. Fine. But as long as you just are lying about it, because in your head you must be free and true to yourself. And you can lie to your community all you want to be accepted. Say, Hardy, I'm in a Jewish Orthodox community, I'm in a Hasidic community, and I cannot leave it. I will be ostracized. I'll have nobody. This is all I know. And yet, I'm starting to doubt so much of it. I don't want to go. Don't cut your pace. All right? But let your mind open. All right? Let that spirit into your mind. Don't do that. Don't lock your brain up. All right? We all might be physical prisoners. We all might be physically trapped in a life, all right? But nothing is, I don't know why I keep saying all right, you're going, okay, I'm here, just go. But your mind, promise me that you will let your mind soar. Promise me that you will go everywhere. Promise me that you will love freely. There's so many we're not allowed to love. I'm not allowed to love these people. I'm gonna love them secretly. And if there's a secret vote, whether to love them or to send them away, I'm going to say embrace. I'm going to check love them. Yes, in my secret ballot in my mind. Oh, my friends, you've been living. You're still listening? Are you still listening to me? How is it in this day and age with our limited attention spans that you're still paying attention to what I'm saying? That you're thinking, gosh, this guy isn't rambling at all, is he? There's an absolute point to what he's saying. And I didn't realize that until the very end. And had I left, and had I discounted him, and had I said, oh, I hate this guy, I would have never thought this thing. And you know what? I owe him nothing. I don't have to give him anything, and I don't have to credit him. It's just like some idiot was giving away dollar bills in front of the grocery store. And that's what I absolutely am. You don't have to tell anybody else you like me. You don't have to say anything. In fact, don't, because it's very dangerous. You got to listen to Hardy. I love him. And then people listen and go, oh, man, I didn't get that. I think less of you. So maybe you shouldn't tell anybody. Don't feel the need to spread the word. Let people discover me on their own if they want to. I don't want it to reflect on you. You know what I'm saying? I have friends like that, you know. But that enough said. Oh, you have been listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White, the most blessed person in the world, or at least he feels that way. I can't thank you enough. Those of you who write me, it's beautiful. Give me time to respond, and I'll tell you why. Because when you write me a nice, sweet email, I just sit, I savor it. I savor it. Like I said, I don't eat cookies. I suck on them because I just want to let them melt slowly. I don't want the experience to end, so I just take my time answering mail. I'm sorry. Sometimes it seems like I'm neglectful, but I'm not. I'm just spreading it out over time so that I can always have something to do and something to answer. But I love hearing from you, and I hope you like hearing from me. But I'll take the chance that you don't, because it's worth saying, and what I have to say I feel is important, and I'm compelled to do it, and I can't stop until they fire me. So I'm just going to keep going. I'm going to keep giving you Miracle Nutrition, which is everything and nothing. How can you be nourished on nothing but air and words? I don't know. I'm hoping you can. You're listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and WFMU.org online. Did I say that right? Because usually I read it, so I don't get it wrong. Whenever I've spoken, I won't tell you what religion, but whenever I've spoken in religious settings, clergy always tell you there's certain things that you should just go ahead and read, because if you got it wrong from memory, you'd look like a complete ass. And that's why I try to always read things that I might zone out on, because I think I remember them and I might not. Oh, bless you. Thank you for listening, and I will see you again next week.
Has devoted her help to God's work. She guarantees to help you through sickness, and the healing is done on the first visit. Telephone Sister Alicia at 279-6928. That's 279-6928. Evil spells removed from your body. What your eyes see, your heart will believe. She will bring your nature back and heal alcoholism. And now Sister Alicia offers a new medication for hair growth with amazing proven results. Don't confuse Sister Alicia with another reader. She will tell you if your conditions are natural or unnatural. Sister Alicia, God's messenger, is waiting to help you through sickness. You have seen her in the papers, heard her on the radio. Now see her in person. Telephone 279-6928. That's 279-6928. See her today. Tomorrow may be too late. Sister Alicia is located next to the Mount Meigs Correctional Center in a brown mobile home.
Sister Alicia is now offering a free lucky charm with each reading.
Oh, every night I lay down to sleep.
Every night
I ask the Lord my soul to keep.
Every night,
every morning as I rise.
Every night,
then I ask Him to be my guide.
Every night
I know the danger. I need Jesus to walk by my side.
Every night.
Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father.